Ready? Good. Hello. Welcome, everybody. Pretty exciting keynote this morning. So if you don't realize it, you've stumbled into the Native UI Framework talk. So happy to see you here. My name is Joe Stegman. I'll be your session guide, if you will, for the next hour. And I'm talking about new features in the UI platform for building, I think we're calling them now, Universal Windows Apps. So with that, let me go ahead and get my clicker here and get organized. So please submit evaluations. They're super important overall for the conference as well as for me and for this talk. And plus you get a free prize, I guess. There's a drawing for a free prize, which maybe you know what it is. I don't. So starting right off, I really can't see out in the audience, but I'm going to try anyway. Does anybody not know what XAML is? Anybody? I see somebody's hand kind of go up. I crafted this slide for you, so don't feel bad. The slide is just for you. No, maybe they were just waving at each other. Okay. Anyway, it is the, if no one really is new to it, then I won't spend time on it. It is basically the native UI platform for the system, and it's what we use for building. By native, I mean it chips with the platform. It's what the first-party experiences and the shells use to build out their experiences, and it's what anybody building a native app typically uses to build out their user interface. And by user interface, I mean buttons, sliders, lists, those sorts of things, to add interactivity to the app experience. And XAML is all about that. So you saw on Windows 10, you saw a lot of things this morning in the keynote, just a ton of things. But one of the main things is about hitting that, whatever, 3 billion number in the some huge number, in the next couple years of devices. And that's super important for Windows. But what we're trying to do across the dev plat and including across the UI framework is we want to make it easier for you to take your experiences and to deliver those across all those endpoints. And so there's some things we can do related to just a unified platform, but there are actually other things we can do to make it easier for you to be able to adapt your experience based on either the device or some other characteristic. And so I'm going to talk about both those later on in this talk. Part of also, you know, having this broader, if you will, set of devices is that even if you're somebody who's only targeting, let's say, mobile, we've increased on our side, we've increased the ecosystem. So even if you're only targeting mobile, that means there's more code samples out there, there's more people actually banging on the platform, making it faster, making it better. So even targeting just one device, this broader ecosystem is really goodness for everybody. So we did a bunch of stuff around Universal Windows apps, but also we did other stuff around that are just basically talking to customers, and they said, hey, I want this or I want that. And if you're wondering, the second one is not Terry's Christmas card to me. His Christmas card to me was a little creepier than that. I'm just joking. It was just the birthday card that was creepier. But that's actually showing ink off in that one, and I'll give you a quick demo of that later on in the talk. But we did, you know, we try to talk to customers at events like this. We go meet customers. We look at forums. And we know there's a lot we can do with the native UI platform, and so we try to incorporate some of that feedback as well into this release. So with that, it is a dev conference. So how about starting off with a dev demo? I've got like 8 little options to pick up here, and I think I got the right one. Visual Studio. I'm going to do File New Project. I'll do this once today. File New Project, and guess what you see? I've selected, in this case, C#, Windows Universal. There's not a phone project. There's not, you know, some sort of multi-headed project. There's not an Xbox project. You know, there's not an IoT project. There's one universal project. Now, you may choose to only deploy it or when you go to the store, or if you're sideloading, you may choose to only ship it to one set of devices. But the platform really is the same. It's the same across everything. And so File New Project is just, it's a File New Universal. It'll run across all of our endpoints. And so let's do, how about a Hello World project, because those are always fun. Now this is, I'm gonna do this once because, and it takes a little bit of time. So while it's setting up, one of the things I wanna show you as I clicked in the far right corner, and I'm bringing up the new, if you will see, a calendaring experience that is a little more touch friendly than what you might have on your 8.1 systems or previous systems. And if some of you may know who are familiar with XAML that currently today, we don't actually have a calendar control in the platform. So what I thought would be fun for the Hello World experience would be to actually try to build out this kind of experience. You can see it's very touch friendly. It's really nice. You can zoom in, zoom out. So it'll be a bit of a challenge, but let's go ahead and give it a shot. So I'm going to come back to the design view in a minute. So this universal project should run, ideally should run everywhere. So let me start, take a look at this thing again. Okay, I think I know what I'm doing here. Let's do calendar view, margin equals 20, vertical alignment equals top. Let's see, let's go look in design view now. Yeah, that looks pretty good. I don't know, I think I nailed it. I mean, that's how easy it is. So I'm going to go ahead and run it to show you this is real. So yeah, we did add a calendar control. I just snuck in a feature there. A few people requested it. It was like number 200 and something on some thing somewhere. Let's see, control. Seriously. It was higher up on others. But I did look it up. So I'm hitting F5. I'm going to run this locally, even though just you saw it. It's the exact same control down here. We didn't mimic it. And what we did in Windows 10 is that basically all the inbox experiences are using XAML to build out their experiences. So no more going, how did they do that? They did it using the same platform that you're using. So here you see, super simple calendar control. I won't walk you through the calendar experience, but what I want to show you is it's a universal app. So let's go ahead and show some universal action here. I'm going to pick ARM, and I'm keeping it reals here, if you will. I may regret this, but I am going to go ahead and run this now on my real device, and I'm going to project my screen. So I'm going crazy here. So this is it's my engineering phone, half set up as my real phone. And again, I'll do this whole deployment first time once. Like right now, I have to just kind of sit back and go, I know it's doing the right thing, but I'm so impatient, I just got to look. So yes, it is deploying. And again, I'll do this sort of full cycle just to kind of show you that it's real just a couple times. Here we go. And here's the experience, exact same experience, not a separate head, exact same XAML file. Now we'll be running on my phone, and you'll see it's all nice and touch friendly, and I can do all the exact same stuff, and I can swipe, but exact same experience here across phone and across my desktop experience. So, you know, that's pretty cool. It's one control. So now I'm going to do my Julia Child, and I'm going to open up an existing app I have. This really is more universal controls. So what I've done here, this really is almost zero code. And the only code in this experience, I'm going to run it real quick. The only code in this experience is that I wired up something to basically open and close the left pane. And I made it so that when I click on one of these left nav things, I reload a different page here. But that's really all I've done in this app experience. And I don't know why it's taken a minute here to build. This is basically all taken pretty much our whole set of common controls and just put them into and untouched all the common controls into this one app, and we'll show you the experience running on a couple different form factors. But again, there's no platform optimizations here as soon as this thing pops up. But what I'll end up showing you is, well, first of all, you can see there's a slightly updated branding, and part of that was because now that we're bringing it to HoloLens and phone and a few other devices, you know, we needed to make sure we had something that was consistent across all those. So we had to do some updates to make it worth controller, et cetera, but here you see, you know, not much, just all the controls working as you'd expect with a slightly updated branding, auto suggest box working, some slightly updated date time pickers, and some other controls. Now, what I want to show you here, I'm on desktop. Have a command bar with overflow. So we've made, people are familiar with our command bar, will see we've made some updates to the command bar. Too many updates for me to go through all of them. But one thing I want to show here is I'm going to click here, and I added a context menu, and you can see a couple things. People familiar with the platform, one, we added cascading, which is nice, and two, it actually, on desktop now that we're Windows apps, it goes outside the window, which is nice, but we've done other nice little things when we could do them, which is I just hit it with my finger, and now you see we actually increased the spacing on that context menu when I actually hit with my finger. And so where possible, we've actually tried to put things in the platform that kind of do the right thing where it's likely not going to impact the developer. So let's say we made all controls bigger on phone and smaller on desktop. You're going to have to think about layout now. So we tried to make a good size that works well everywhere. And in cases where we could do this, where we could kind of light up the right behavior where you don't have to think about it or it won't get in your way, we did that as well. So let's go ahead and take this one step further and do the ARM deployment here. And I'll show you it running on my phone. And you'll see the same experience. So it won't take a lot of time here. Project my phone, yes. Now, one thing, right away you'll go, hey, that's kind of a crappy experience. And that has nothing to do with hamburger. It's that I really have to give you a default experience here. This is one of the things I'll talk about later on in my talk, which is, hey, sometimes, even though I'm going to show you all the controls, it's in a wrap grid, which is why it's a single row here if I actually do it landscape, in case you think I've got a different view here or doing any magic. It's the exact same desktop view. But how I interact with it going through the menu here is less than ideal, and I'll talk about how you can fix that later on in the talk, but you see all the controls work the same way. But when I get to other controls, now I'll hit the fly out, and you see it has the wide spacing like it should, and I'll hit app bar, the command bar, and you see we actually go edge to edge because we can do that. It's slightly better on mobile, and you as a dev don't have to think about it. So nice experience with all the controls everywhere. But you know, sort of our promise here was not just about these two devices, but a couple other devices. So what I'm going to do here is anybody who came in a little early, and I'm not sure anybody did come in a little early, and I'm sorry, the reason this is blurry is not because of anything to do with the system. It's because I'm going to my Xbox One here, HDMI out to VGA to this little box, and as a result of all that, it's got a less than optimal experience. This is the same app, and literally I just deployed it, like I said, right before I came in here, just to make sure we didn't have any issues. Exact same app experience, working with controller. And one thing we're still fixing is focus on Xbox is super important, so we'll light up FocusRex. It's right now on agile planning. I'm hitting A to toggle agile planning, but you can see went up to checkbox. All the controls just work the way you'd expect them. And you know, maybe those are simple controls, but I can come into the auto-suggest box, hit A, and I can go down and get the SIP, and I can do exactly like I would on my desktop experience. Hit B to get out of there. I'm going back to choosers here. Oh, no. There we go. Whew. I was going to say this never crashes. Or other, and you can see I go in here in the combo box and interact. By default, I did nothing to light up this experience. It just works. That doesn't mean you don't need to tailor or you might not want to tailor, but just showing you that exact same experience works on Xbox. So there's the app running there, but I deployed it to one other device. So let's try this one and see if that's correct. So again, exact same app. Now it's running on this Raspberry Pi 2, my exact same app. I may want to tailor, but just to show you, it is the exact same experience working on this device, done nothing, just deployed, and everything works exactly the same. I don't have a keyboard hooked up to it, but if I did, I'd be able to show you more interactivity in this. But that's really what we've done here, is we've really taken this common platform. No .NET CF and you know big .NET. No, you got to do a tricky different version. It's the same thing running across all these different endpoints. And we've really tried to make the controls work great across all those different endpoints. Tailoring, though, is a different story, and that's what I'll spend a lot of the rest of my talk on, talking about the tailoring aspect of this. So with that, I'll get back to the deck. So one thing I do want to mention is that, you know, people, how many people have built 8.1 apps, 8.1 universal apps, some folks? So as part of that, you're probably used to this experience where you create multiple heads, one for phone and one for desktop, which you don't have to do now. But part of that is that sometimes the controls, they were similar but slightly different, and so we had to take all those rough edges and kind of sand them off, but that means sometimes we had cases like password box where the default experience for it was just different across Windows desktop and Windows phone. We didn't have it on desktop and or on Xbox and IoT, so we didn't have to worry about it. But we had cases like this where we had to pick a behavior and do something about it. And so what we did, I guess I can use the clicker here, is that just to let you know that in those cases, we picked a default behavior. And the way we picked the default behavior is we basically took a bunch of data that we got from people using the experience. We put it in the cloud. We did a bunch of analytics on it. We had our data scientists poke and prod on it, and they spit us out, this is what you should do. I think that's what we did. We might just pick a behavior, but I'm not sure. I think it's the first one. Net result is we had to pick a behavior, and then the end result is that sometimes you're stuck then with, we had the old phone behavior, and some people may love that, and we had the old Windows behavior, and they may love that. And so how do we deal with that? And so in those cases, we ended up having to add another property that says, hey, which behavior do you want? And if you're going to build a Windows 10 head on top of your, like if you want to build a Windows 10 head on top of your existing 8.1 app and you want to start with your 8.1 assets, then there are things like this that you're going to have to know about. And there's a talk on Friday by Sam Jarwin, who's actually going to go into this in detail, but I'm not. But on the way to getting to universal apps, we had some pleasantries fall out of that, and that we had controls that only lived on one or the other. And so for those things, we could either do nothing, or we could say, hey, let's just make them universal. And pivot is a signature control on phone. And we looked at that, and we said, it feels like a really touch-centric thing, but we realized, no, this thing could work great with mouse and keyboard. All we need to do is we add some flippers to it to make it work with mouse and keyboard, and it actually works like a tab-like experience. And we took it a step further, and we made it so it could actually more easily be branded to do a tab-like experience, whether you want to do that on phone or desktop. But so we took this control, we made it work well on desktop, and then we added some features to it. And you'll see that's a common theme for the next few slides here. Content dialog was another control that was previously only on phone 8.1. On Windows, there was something called a message dialog or something like that, but it didn't support XAML child content for people who are XAML people. This does, and so this now you can use if you need to do app modal stuff, and it's, again, more powerful than what you might have been used to before on Windows. Auto-suggest box was the way you do kind of auto-complete, if you will, on phone, and unfortunately on Windows, we had a different solution called search box. So that one created a tough one because we didn't want to converge and have two things. So yeah, pick whichever one you want. So what we did is that, and they were both had slightly different behaviors. So what we did is we took the good stuff in search box, which was it had some good IME support, search glyph. We added those to auto suggest box. We still have search box, but likely in the future we're going to deprecate it and put our investments into auto suggest box. And then maps, there was like a Nokia maps and there was a Bing Maps, and now there's just one Maps with even more features, and I believe there's a talk that goes into detail on this either later today or next week. So now also you got a Universal Maps API, which is kind of nice. And with that, that's kind of the, I'll get onto mostly net new stuff now, but that's kind of the things that just fell out of us kind of getting to one common core platform. So I mentioned before that we've really tried really hard to make it so that our controls actually really work great everywhere. And that means they work with, you can take an app and run it as a holographic experience, and it works as a what we call flat app. Xbox controller, we've tried to make it so you as a developer don't have to do anything there. It doesn't mean if you're writing custom controls you won't have to do something. But in general, we've really tried to make it such that we don't think controls will be your dealing with controls across different devices, if you will be a big issue for developers. What is going to probably be more of a big issue is that when you start thinking about building those, using those controls to build up more complex views, and they touched on this in the keynote and in my talk before this, but you rarely, maybe you'll come across an experience like calculator where, guess what, one view works everywhere, it's perfect, high five, only one design, but that's probably not the most common thing. So anybody who's used to even old Win32 programming, or used to doing web programming, knows that Windows can be resized, and this is an extension to that. Not only can Windows be resized, but now you can run your window, if you will, the exact same window on multiple devices with different characteristics, screen size being one of them. So you as a developer, you're gonna probably wanna do something to optimize or tailor for that. And so we've tried to inject some things into the platform to make that easier, which is what I'm gonna talk about next. And all this, this is showing here, which I think I'm going to do a demo of, is that, you know, there are things like secondary navigation. Actually, let me just jump into the demo. The picture, the red frame around me and the girl I photographed in there or photoshopped in there, that is just showing that the screenshot or the screen or the photo size is actually smaller on mobile. It's actually smaller in the photos experience here, because they don't want to decode it and use as much memory on that device. So there's one about the navigation, which is one of the red boxes, but that's what it was trying to show there. But forget that. Let's just jump to, let's just kind of show you what I really want to show you here. Pick the right one. Back here? Yes. Okay. And my app. And I'm going to pop up photos just real quick because you've, I think Terry and touched on this a little bit, but the main thing I want to show here is that this is an experience you're going to see a lot, which is, you know, as you resize, the app adapts. And in here, I'm firing up my phone, which I'll show you in a minute, but I just want to get it fired up so you don't have to wait for it to fire up on phone. But as a developer, these are the kind of things that, you know, even on desktop, you see, even on desktop, I have to worry about resizing. And so there are certain things that you're likely going to want to be able to do to your app. And one of the things, and the first thing I'll talk about, is you are seeing, and I'm not going to be an apologist for the hamburger pattern, because we don't bake in, if you will, the hamburger pattern per se into the UI control. What I do want to say is there are times where you have secondary commands, like navigation commands here, and they're important, and they're great to see when you have enough space. But when you don't have enough space, those are the kind of things, especially in photos where you want to see the pictures of something like my beautiful wife here, that you want to hide those and still make them available through a secondary UX affordance. In the case here, you can see the affordance is now I've popped out, or I've got a pop out. And one of the main features, or one of the features that we added in Windows 10 that I'll show, is a feature called Split View, and it basically enables this experience, and in fact, that's what Photos uses, which is I can create a pane, a secondary pane, which is actually this pane over here with collections through settings, and I can take that, and based on my size, I can basically put it into a overlay mode and make it pop out through a secondary affordance. And I'm going to just quickly just jump over and show you that same experience running here on my phone. This is, you can see from, I'm just running the exact same Photos app. This is the Photos app that comes in box. You can see here at Microsoft, we're drinking the Kool-Aid. It's the same app here. Clearly, same app, same experience, same stuff. It just, the default experience I get here is that everything on my phone, which you can see on the screen, the default experience I get here is there's less space, so they use smaller images, and they go into an overlay mode for their, if you will, their split view. So what we've done in the platform is we've tried to look at those kinds of patterns, and we said, hey, what can we do to make it easier for developers to build those kind of patterns? And so jumping back to my deck here, there's a couple things that we've done. And the first one, I just did this. The first one is the split view, which I just talked about and just did a demo of, so I won't spend a lot of time here, but there's really, as I said, there's a secondary pane, which you can kind of hide and make fly out, and then there's the primary content area. But the other thing is that you start thinking, how do you, as a developer, how do you power this? What are your rules? Are you just writing code that says, look at window size, and when I see window size, do this? Or is there a better way to do that sort of a thing? And so what we've done is we've kind of looked at other solutions in the industry, and we've thought a lot about it. And so we've got this new feature, which is basically adaptive triggers and setters, or it's really an extension to VSM. And for people on the web world who are kind of used to media queries, it's like an really extensible version of that. But effectively, you as a developer can set up rules, and here is called an adaptive trigger that says, we have built-in size rules, like when the window is this size, do that is effectively what you can do with the rules. But they're declarative. So one, they're easy to define. And two, the design tool can actually help you do this. And I'll say in the current version, the designer helping you do this or the design solution for this is not online yet. But that the reason that we've done it declaratively is so the designer can actually do this. So what the rules are saying here, the bottom rule is saying, effectively, hey, when my size is between 0 and 720, which is the top rule, I want to set this set of properties, but I want to do these actions. And the top one is saying 720 and beyond, do these sets of actions. Now, the trigger itself, I said we built in width rules, screen width rules, but there's a talk tomorrow by Tim Heuer and Harini who are going to talk about this in much more detail, and they're going to talk about how you can actually create and define your own triggers. And then you can define your own rules for what happens when one of those triggers is actually hit. So this is a really super powerful way for you to really easily define the rules that allow you to sort of adapt your app. So the other thing we've done is I'm going to jump back. Sorry for the disjoint nature here. Let's jump back and look at I'm on the phone here, I'm going to pop up settings, and we'll see if it comes up quickly. And if it does, here's settings. This little thing is settings on my phone, and we're going to bring up settings on my big display. Now, you may go, hey, those are different experiences, but I'm going to resize on, and boom. The desktop one actually just turned into, it's the same app. Even again, on Windows, we're doing the exact same thing. It's just when I size it smaller, it reacts differently and it lays out differently. But this is a little more advanced than what I showed before with split view. And what's more advanced is if you see find a setting here, one thing is watch the text. You see it pops up. So it kind of moves. So layout kind of changes there a bit. The other one is, other than this icon being different because it's phone, all the rest are the same. But you can see in the phone, it's icon, text next to it, kind of a two-column layout. And my phone just went to sleep. Hello. There we go. And on desktop, watch when I switch, the mode is now I've gone exact same text, but now it's kind of in a vertical layout. So here I've done an actual layout switch rather than just a simple setting a property switch. And so what we've done in 10 is, again, taking a look at that, is we've added a new panel to help assist in those kind of scenarios. So if people are familiar with Android, they might be familiar with sort of the relative panel layout that they have there. We kind of have a similar thing. And so this is showing us my actually next sample that I'm going to show. If you're a XAML developer, you probably tried to lay something out like this before using some combo of grids and stack panels. And even then, you may not be able to get it quite right. So it looks pretty simple. It's just an image with three things of text and a button. But I may want to get that button aligned to the bottom. And there are things like that that can sometimes be a bit of a challenge. And it does require what we call nested panels. And nested panels aren't necessarily a bad thing. But it turns out if you're displaying hundreds of images, you're creating a lot of extra elements, if you will. And as Mark Alcazar and Kiran Kumar are doing a talk, I think tomorrow, where they're talking about perf, if you want to start up as fast as possible, if you want to pan as fast as possible, these little things about using extra elements can start to slow you down. So what would be great would be if there was a better way to define this. And that's what relative panel is about. So take the exact same layout, image. Now I can add my next text block. And I say, hey, I want this to be to the right of the image and aligned with the top of the image. And I want my authors to be aligned to the right of the image and below the title. Oh. It took me four. So what are you guys doing, sleeping? I clearly am. Sorry. OK, that was the previous one I showed, which was the nested panels. Moving forward. So this is relative panel. Image on the left, so the same view that I had previously showed. It's like, how do you, and what I was trying to do, sorry, since I didn't, I was trying to show how to build this experience off on the right, and the first slide was showing how you would do this using grid and stack panels, which is the traditional way you might do it in XAML, and it's hard to do things like align the bottom button, so I'm showing the exact same experience and how you would build it using relative panel, and with relative panel, you would use, just stick your image in it, you would say my text block's title, and you would say it's to the right of the image and aligned with the top of the image. And the next text block is just aligned to the right of the image again and below the previous one. Same thing with summary, right of the image but below the authors. And then the last one, the button, is to the right of the image but aligned with I could have do it with the bottom of the panel or to the right of the image. So really more complex layout, but easier to do with relative layout panel. And then you start thinking about this and the setter thing that I talked about before, the kinds of wild things that you could do in terms of in response to something like a layout change. It becomes super, super powerful to be able to change your layouts dynamically. Previously, you might have had to do some weird stuff with changing columns and that sort of thing in a grid. No longer. You can use this, and it turns out it solves the kind of scenarios that I previously showed with settings. So with that, I actually want to jump back. Try to do this correct this time. I will jump back to my demo machine, and let's go ahead and just show you this stuff in real action here as I get rid of all this and get rid of my previous one. And I'm going to open a project. And effectively, this is it's the simplest project you've ever seen. It doesn't maybe you won't look at it and think it's that simple, but it turns out it really is super simple. It is a stack panel on the top with an icon. That's my UX affordance for opening up. You don't see anything here because it's all data bound. I have a split view. There's the panel, the pane, and there's the content area. So let's go ahead and run it. It's all data bound. It's going and getting data from a service. The service is filling up this list on the left, and it's doing the same thing based on what I select here. It's going off and grabbing a service and data binding this stuff. I'll actually show you the XAML for it. This is super simple. Literally, it's less than 100 lines of XAML code to do all of this experience, and most people who've used XAML before can tell you that's not an exaggeration. But what I want to show here is that you'll notice I'm going to run into the same experience I showed in my the first demo I did with the controls, and that as I resize this down, or if I were to run it on the phone, you're going to see this experience. One, that doesn't get, I would really like that to go into an overflow mode, the split view. And two, you can see the text does not look ideal here. So it starts to overlap stuff. Ideally, I'd like to fix that as well. So those are two things that I go, you know, I'd love to fix those. And if you're a XAML developer, you can start thinking, how would you do that in your app experience? And I'm guessing what you would probably do is going to be more complex than what I'm going to show you here, but maybe not. There's some really clever people. I'm always shocked at what people can come up with. I'm saying that my experience, this is really pretty simple. There's a command bar at the bottom. I've just hid these just to make them easy to read, but that's the details view. That's the navigation pane right there, data bound. And this right here is the stack panel that holds my UX affordance. I said we didn't build in the hamburger pattern. You actually have to add your UX affordance. I've added a three bar icon that opens and closes it. And that's really the only code I've added here. When I click that button, open and close. So, and I pre-canned in. The only other thing in here is I pre-canned in those visual states I just showed you. And so I'm gonna uncomment it. And what I've pre-wired up here, it's the only thing I've changed here, is I've just added these new visual triggers. And all I say here is that when my size is between 0 and 720, that I want my display mode to basically be the overlay, and I want the pane to default to closed. And when it's 720 above, make it open. And I could do this and say I want to only do that on mobile. I could add my own, if you will, triggers that are not just min-width, but could be something else. But now, just to keep it simple, I've just done it based on size. So that was step A that I wanted to fix. And I'll just, because it won't take me much to show you that on desktop, and then I'll come back and show it on phone. So I'll just run it. And now, with those couple lines of code, boom. That's simple. Super easy to do that adaptive change. And really, there's nothing up my sleeve. That was all it took. So, and just to keep it real, I'm going to show you one more. But this one, and I'm trying to show you real experience here. This second one is in a data template, and people familiar with XAML will know that's a way that you generate UI in a data-bound way. Right now, we have not wired up the triggers yet to work in data templates. But so, like I said, I'm trying to keep it real. But how do you get around that? That's really simple. All I did is I created a blank user control. For people who know, user controls are the ways you can create reusable components of UI in XAML. But this is an empty blank user control. I'm just going to take my data template. Oops, I don't want my data template. Back out. Stop, Joe. You're ruining your demo. Okay, let's go back. I just want my relative panel. That's all I want. Thank you. And go back to my view. I just want the relative panel. That's it. That looks good. And now my user control is named book item view, so local book. Now, all I did is I just shoved that into a user control. My app will now run exactly the same way. That's all I did. But I want to show you that additional piece of adaptability. So let's go ahead and copy what I did before. Put it in the book item view at the beginning here. But I don't really want to do split view display mode. I want to fix that text overflow problem. So that text is actually, it's this property here, summary. That's that one that tends to get long. And what I would like to do is I would just like to set the max number of lines. So I'm going to do summary, and I'm going to set max lines In a normal situation, we'll say 5 sounds good, and we'll copy that and redo that same rule down below. But in the 0 to 720 case, I want max lines to be 3. And let's go ahead and let's just shoot for the whole ball of wax. Let's run this on mobile so you get to see the full experience on mobile. And yes, I do want to project. So if you remember before, it would come up side by side. But mobile, now you can see I'm not side by side. Awesome. And look at the text. Oh, something didn't work. Look at that. What did I do wrong? Thank you. I love having a smart audience. It is plural. Look at that. Thank you, Rain Man. No offense to, sorry, I don't know how to get out of that. If you can get your money back at the back, I'm sorry. There, thank you. Thank you, that person over there who helped with my demo. So there you see it. Now on here, okay, I saw it. I was excited. That was my trick, was to pretend like it was working. It really wasn't. So boy, oh boy. See, I love my technology. It's so cool. So there, you see now. See now, now you can applaud. Yeah, this is the. And it really was that simple to do. I really tried to take a real sample to build that out. For people who care, I have one more mod that I'm not going to make now, but it's the same. I do a couple more lines, and I actually move that UX affordance from the top down into the command bar using the same trigger. For people who really want to make sure their UX, that don't like hamburger and the reaching associated with hamburger, I have a command bar down here, and I just added the UX affordance down there under the same trigger, and it was super, super easy to do. So with that, let me switch back and go to the PowerPoint and talk about some other things that we've done. Am I on the right thing? Yes. So performance. I mentioned there is a talk tomorrow on performance by Mark Alcazar and Kiran Kumar. And one thing about performance that is interesting is that I mentioned that all of our experiences kind of moved over to XAML. And that's really great for everybody in that now when you see something, you go, hey, you know, you should be able to do the exact same thing. There was no cheating internally by providing the first parties or general experiences and allowing them to do something you as a third party can't do. But the side effect for our team was, that's good for you, is that, hey, the shell is running all the time. It's running 24/7. And that thing, when I hit the start menu, that start screen better come up. And it better not be taking all my memory in the system. And like I said, it better be blazingly fast. And so before, when the shells could sort of default to having their own framework in some cases, it allowed us to not necessarily keep the performance metrics we would need for really super, super high performance needs like the shell. So what we did is we had to spend a lot of time on just making XAML as lean and trim as possible. And with that, there's a set of things, and I guess I don't talk about it on my next slide, but Mark and Kieran will talk about it. There's a set of things that if you just take your existing 8.1 app and run it on Windows 10, it's faster, because we just had to do a bunch of just general performance stuff in the engine. There's another set of things when you recompile for Windows 10, your app gets faster. And that's because when you compile, we kind of turn the XAML into a fast node stream. And we made that node stream so much better on Windows 10. And you have to retarget to get that up. So it's really a much more better binary format, if you will. And then there were some things where we just couldn't find any way to just make it implicit. And we had to have people opt into. And so there's one of those I want to talk about. Because it turns out the side effect of this is it's actually really good developer value. And it's something called compiled bindings. So one of the things we noticed is bindings are inherently string-based. And anybody who's had a binding where they actually had the name wrong and everything compiled and worked and your app didn't run and you didn't know why, it's because at runtime we're doing a lookup. And if the lookup doesn't work, sometimes we throw an exception and sometimes you never see it. And it can be painful. But also, guess what? It can be slow. We're actually using reflection to do that lookup, and that takes CPU and that takes memory. And so our first thought was, which is a great thought, we said, bindings, they're evil. Let's have nobody use bindings, and everything will get faster. And you think I'm joking. And we're like going, our developers, they're smart. They're C++ guys. They'll get it. Guys or gals. I meant guys as a general neutral, gender neutral term. So again, ask for your money back. Sorry about that. So we literally did. You know, Mark can tell you, we actually said don't use bindings. But we even told people and they'd still do it. So I go, well, this is not working. What can we do? And so after some thinking, it turns out that we can actually resolve bindings at compile time. And we can basically just turn them into loosely property sets. We hook change notification when we need to. And it turns out, not only is that a lot faster, and I mean a lot faster, it turns out when you type name wrong in your binding, you now get a compiler check. Yes. And other things that fell out, oh, now it's pretty easy for us to just wire up. If I go ahead, one. So effectively what you need to do to move to bindings is we did have to change the syntax, but we tried to keep it as compatible as possible. You do have to say in your data template, you may have to say, here's my type that I'm binding to, which you should know what your type is. And other than that, you just change binding to x colon bind. And now, though, side effect of that, too, is not only do you get compile time checking, things like event handlers, you can now wire up directly with x colon bind. So we actually have new features in there as well. So this is, as I said, it started out as a perf feature. It started out as we tried to kill a feature, and it ended up as a pretty nice feature that we all feel pretty good about it. So definitely try that out. Sam Spencer, I think, has a talk right after this where he's going to go into way deep on this. One other nice side effect of this is I mentioned we at compile time we generate all this. We actually generate it in the form of a CS file, so you can actually single step through your bindings now. The code that we used to do reflection that was hidden in the framework, you can actually step through now to see what's going on with your binding. So super powerful. Love the feature. So other things we did that didn't fall out of perf. This is just a smattering of, we did a long list, but just a set of sort of the highlights. For people who have done tricks in the past where they want to know when something changes, like visibility on an element changes, or when something else happens, and we don't provide change notification on that property. Some people have in the past done tricks where they hook up element-to-element binding to their own DP and then figure it out that way. Anyway, so we go, that's kind of crazy. We'll just have a property now on our all DPs, so you can basically hook change notification on pretty much any UI property now, which, again, is something that we've heard lots of people ask for in the past. This next one, if you were to have Windows 10 installed, then you hit the start screen. When it first comes up, you see all the tiles doing this fancy 3D stuff. And some people may be going, hey, but you support Perspective Transform. We do, and the thing about Perspective Transform is you can transform any one element in 3D space. If you want to do multiple elements in 3D space, you transform both of them. And then if you want to animate those, you have two separate animations, or N animations, to animate all of those. If you want to do some kind of camera on top of those, good luck. You better be a rocket scientist, because it's really hard. So we basically have a composable way to do that, where you can sort of set, if you will, camera, and then you can set perspectives at multiple levels, which makes these kinds of things so much easier. And I do have a demo of this. I'll just show you the demo and probably not go into the code, but it's super, super easy. My demo is actually all markup demo. Windowing. You know, windowing apps running in a window is back on the desktop. Cool. Yes. High five. Yeah, great. But as part of that, so you expect now to be able to do custom Chrome. But if you're going to be doing custom Chrome, you know, is there a way we can kick that up? And hey, there is actually a way. It's really easy. First of all, it's easy to do branding on your Chrome. You can now change the background and foreground color. But you can take it a step further. You can actually define a little XAML snippet in your page, and you can basically annotate that XAML snippet, and you can say, hey, please use this XAML as my custom Chrome. And you can put that anywhere in your page, actually. And that's the thing that you can then use to move around your app and resize your app. So super powerful. So not only can you do custom Chrome, you can do it just using declarative XAML markup. And I'll actually show you a demo where I did exactly just that. And it's really just that hard. So here's Terry's creepy Christmas photo to me. But this is just showing we added a We have a way to do ink in the platform. Has anybody tried doing a high fidelity ink experience before? A couple people. How was it? Good? Good. You're probably smart. So, but it's not always the easiest thing. So what's kind of been overhauled, updated, and doesn't do things like palm rejection. So if you actually have somebody who's like an artist who touches their palm on it, our existing solution didn't do that. But we've got a new control called Ink Canvas. It's just that easy. You shove it in, and you're inking. And there's a talk that talks about this in a lot of detail. You can get the strokes and smoothing and lots of stuff. It's really cool. It's really super powerful. And drag and drop. They showed this morning in the keynote, but drag and drop, super easy now, where you can drag from the desktop, drop it into your app, and vice versa. And it's, if people have done old Win32 drag and drop, this is like that, only easier. It's just super simple to do. And so with that, let's see, I got 14 minutes because I got one more good demo that I want to show after I show you this over here. My last demo is a fun little demo, which is not this one, but this one's not bad either. Okay, so everybody can see? Good. I want to make the same mistake again. I want this one. So what I've done here, you'll see it in design view, is basically run this app, and I've basically taken and used the perspective transform, and now, for example, this is all markup except for doing the animation. It's super simple to do, and you are seeing some drawing artifacts, but it's all these are real 3D cubes, and literally, this is so simple to do. This is like each one of these cubes is 10 lines of XAML. It's just reused. But these sort of experiences become super simple with the new 3D APIs. And here's my custom Chrome. That's just an image element in XAML that I said, actually, no, that's an icon glyph that in XAML that I just said, hey, please use this as my Chrome. And that's my Chrome. That's how I move. That's how I resize. And it's, this sample is so simple. I'd like to tell you that it's super hard, but it turns out that it's actually not super hard to do. All my main heavy lifting, the top is all, this is basically what I use to display each one of those cubes. The top is all my animation, but this is it right here. It's this code. These are just creating the sides. Each one of those is a side of the cube, but that's all it is. And I'm just putting a transform on each one and animating a layer higher. So it really turns out it's super, super easy to do. But what I want to do is I want to keep this running because I want to use this for my next demo. But I'll get back to the PowerPoint to intro my next demo, which will be my final one. So we've done a bunch of enhancements to, you saw the new announcement with the Edge engine today. So it's no longer Project Spartan, but I didn't update this slide. I left in the teaser Edge. Anyway. It's my own clever trick that's not very clever. But anyway, there's a bunch of enhancements. The access you saw to WinRT that they showed today in the keynote, you as a XAML app can host a web view, and that web view can turn around and access WinRT. But there's a bunch of other things that have been done to the web view. There's a session tomorrow, I believe, Kevin Hill or somebody can tell me when it is, I think was sitting over here. There's a session tomorrow that talks about all the new great stuff that's added in the web view control that'll apply to your XAML app. And then there are some improvements to XAML and Visual Studio. You saw a little bit today, I think, about how you can resize your experience in, you can resize the experience in the designer. It's this experience here. Since we only have one universal app, now you can preview it on, hey, what does this look like on a phone? Which this does work on a phone. And let's fit to screen. But you can, oh, that's not what I wanted. Let's go 60. Oh, there, it's in there somewhere. Okay, we'll pick IoT, Surface. Oh boy, I should have quit while I was ahead. There it is. So it gives you an idea of what it would look like on a Surface Hub. But there's some features like this where you can do portrait landscape across all the devices in design view since you don't have individual ones. And I'll come back to that later. Show you a different demo on that same one. So that's one of the things that we've done. We've also done a new, that's the first image. We've done a new timeline tool, which I think Mark and Kieran are going to talk about tomorrow. But the timeline tool has been greatly enhanced and super powerful. But the last one that I kind of want to end on is kind of a fun little one, which is a visual tree inspector. So let me just show you that in action. So people who are, you know, use web tools will know that. I confused myself here. Okay, where is my? Run it again. Oh boy, what have I done? I just turned off my view that I wanted, and you know what? You would think I'd know how to turn it back on. Thank you, guys. Windows, top, Windows, live, ah, yay. Oh. Yeah, we're getting out and we're getting back in. You know what? While I'm doing this, actually, let me show you the feature a different way. You can tell me whether this is good or not. Here's what I was going to show you. I was going to show you in my previous app. I'm going to debug, and I'm going to attach. Again, you tell me if this is a good thing or not. Attach. Did I see what I just did? Oh, someone said yes in a way that's like, that's not a good thing. Say it more positively. I feel better about my demo right now. Yes. So effectively, you get to see primarily in your app. This is not it would only be good in this kind of experience if you wanted to go, I want to know what icon they're using, not if you want to know how they're actually doing it. This is a really great thing in your own app experience where you're going, how is that margin? Where is that margin getting set? Because what this does is it basically gives you the full, if you will, XAML visual tree. And that's what you see on the left here. And what you can do, which is what I was going to show in my previous app experience, is you can actually go and select an individual item and go, hey, what's the color they use on that font? And you can actually find out. It's solid color brush. And there's the actual color that they're using. It's apparently transparent. But you can actually interact with it, so I can change real time to go, hey, okay, I picked the wrong one. I'm gonna go back to my other app because that's the one I knew how to do this since I got them. Nope, not that one. That's that one. It'll work. It will work. Because primarily, you know, the big value is a lot of times people who are familiar and use XAML, sometimes they're going, what is going on here? How is that getting set? And this will tell you whether it's coming from a style. There we go. So let's go ahead and I could select, like, how is that text getting set and what is it? And you'll see, I keep fooling myself by changing my Chrome. I'm going to move it over here. The visual tree inspector will tell me, it was text block. It'll tell me what size it is. It'll tell me whether or not it's set from a style, and I must have clicked on something else. I did. This is great for multi-mon. It's kind of tougher with single-mon. There you go. Terry Meyerson. It tells me it's set from a style in app.xaml, and it tells me all the settings that are actually in that style. But what I want to show you, too, is I clicked on the image background, and there's the transform 3D here, and I'm going to set the Z so you can actually interact with it. I'll set it to -3, let's make it 400. So I just pushed that image back into it to show you the kind of effects you can generate with the, I'm gonna click on this, which will make my app go away, but I'll just show you what I just did. So in real time, now you can see I got a parallax effect going on because I just take that image with our new Transform 3D stuff and I just pushed it back 300 effective pixels in the Z order. And now you can see I get this nice kind of clever experience. But in general, this debugging tool, it's super powerful. I use it all the time, just in even building simple apps where I'm going, why is that margin, why is that off a couple pixels? And now you can go through and click on something, go through the whole visual tree, and sorry, because I'm not multi-mon, I could go through the whole visual tree, that's text block with an ellipse on top of it, in a grid, in a variable size wrap grid, and I go at any one of these and check what are the margins, what are the settings, so it becomes a super powerful way to figure out what's kind of really going on with your app. And with that, I think, did that, There are a bunch of other things that we've done that I didn't go over, but there, some cases these are covered by other sessions, certainly be covered in the docs, but a lot of other things up and beyond this. Related sessions listed here, as I mentioned, a couple of these, the data binding and XAML performance. There's a Harini and Tim got a talk tomorrow on adaptability in depth. Session evaluation, please. And with that, thank you, everybody. I appreciate you coming and learning about native UI. And I'll leave you with that. And I'll stick around for questions.